Hi, folks. This is Talking Honor. My name is Harley R. Padgett. This is the official Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated to Ring of Honor. I've been doing this show for a total of, this is episode number 15 for May 8th, 2018. I started this series way back in the depths of winter with a co-host named Lola Bradbury. A couple weeks ago, she had to step away from the show to focus on other things. I began a quest to find someone who could fill her boots. Who could possibly measure up to the Steel City sweetheart, Lola Bradbury? I don't know. I had some guest hosts on, some people who are already Pro Wrestling Torch fixtures, some people who are new to the Torch universe, people who are longtime ROH fans, people who have just started watching, looking for something, some sign from the universe that I found my new co-host, and either I did or I settled. I don't know. You decide. But I'm joined this week by my new permanent co-host, this week, next week, for the foreseeable future. Her name is Emily Fear.
Hello. Yay for settling.
Coincidentally, Emily Fear, also from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yes. Yes. Not the Steel City sweetheart, but yes, definitely from the Steel City.
Yes. And that's just a weird coincidence, folks. Like, I didn't find you through Lola. You don't know Lola. I barely know Lola. I barely know you. It's just Twitter brings people together, and if two of them happen to be in the same city, that's just a fun little coincidence.
Yeah, I wonder if Lola made it to the TV taping when ROH was in Pittsburgh.
Maybe she was also in the crowd. No, I know for a fact that she didn't, because before it happened, I asked her if she was going, and she said she couldn't.
Got it. Well, I did, and that's how you connected with me.
There you go. So, yeah, last week, this week on ROH TV, and for the next week or two, I'd say, is the Pittsburgh series of tapings. You were live in attendance. Did you see yourself on TV this week?
I did not, but I did hear my husband's boos. He has very loud, very distinctive booing. So throughout the kingdom, throughout the castle and the boys match against the kingdom and Matt Taven, you can hear pretty loud and clear, like a really deep bellowing boo, and that's my husband.
Wow. Well, your husband sounds like a Melvin.
I think Matt Taven was. But on the other side of us, if you hear shrieking throughout Matt Taven's entrance, that was the woman on the other side of us, and she was a huge Matt Taven fan, so I don't think he'll think that she's a Melvin.
Oh, she's got a thing for Paulie Shore, does she?
Apparently, yeah. And like really, really tan, like really a lot of tan oil.
Welcome to the kingdom, buddy.
I think she was shrieking for Matt Taven. I guess she could have been shrieking for Vinny, but I think it was for Matt Taven.
All the girls shriek for the horror king, Vinny Marsaglia. He didn't have any balloons this week.
He had balloons. I think so. I'm pretty sure he had balloons.
Oh, maybe that happened off camera because I didn't remember seeing any. I don't know. So we'll get into ROH TV. We'll get into the War of the Worlds tour. That's happening in a matter of days. They're hitting Massachusetts. They're hitting my hometown of Toronto, Ontario. Royal Oak, Michigan, Chicago, Illinois. Lots of stuff happening there. Lots of New Japan talent.
Yes.
And lots happening in the world of New Japan now. I think for purposes of this show going forward, you can become our official Japanese correspondent.
Oh, excellent. My dreams are coming true. I'll have to speak Japanese now.
So some of our listeners, I guess a significant portion of the ROH viewer base probably doesn't follow New Japan. I know this seems crazy to the people who are big New Japan people, but for a variety of reasons, they might not. I mean, I keep abreast of what's happening over in New Japan, but I don't watch every single show. I just don't have the money or the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and there's so much of it. When you compare, because ROH has Honor Club and now you can watch all these specials that they tape all over the place, you have a lot of content to like keep you satiated. So to throw New Japan Pro Wrestling on top of that, that's a lot of content, especially if I don't have a problem because I don't follow WWE.
Yeah.
I'm the oddball who like follows a lot of New Japan Pro Wrestling, but like doesn't really like the big guys, the big, big wrestling entity in this country. I don't follow really at all, aside from what I keep up on with Twitter and just the occasional headlines. So that does leave me time to follow things like not just Wrestling Dontaku, which was Thursday and Friday of last week, but like the whole building tour towards it. So they did a whole like tour road to Dontaku that had a ton of great matches leading up to this 2-day tournament event. So I have the time for it, but other people who watch, you know, like 4 hours of what it like, how long is Raw? How long is SmackDown?
Too long.
Yeah. So I don't have to follow that. So instead I'm watching like 4-hour specials every couple of weeks, courtesy of New Japan.
So they're WWE fans going, who the hell is Hiroshi Tanahashi? But instead, you're the New Japan fan saying, whatever happened to Shinsuke Nakamura? That guy just disappeared off the face of the earth.
Or like being or hearing about WrestleMania and their and his match against AJ and being like, oh my gosh, I remember their match at Wrestle Kingdom and how great that was. So
yeah, so you have the happy memories, whereas everybody else is like, what's the big deal about these two?
I mean, I guess there's a lot more ball punching right now, and that seems to be the thing.
It's the cool thing to do in 2018.
it's the heel move. So
yeah. I mean, we saw it with Cody and Taven in ROH too. It's just it's just fun for the whole family.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't like a good like shot to the nuts?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a morale builder.
So tell us who don't follow New Japan in depth. What happened this week? What was the name of the event?
It's Wrestling Dontaku.
Okay.
It was 2 days in Fukuoka, Japan. And it featured a ton of big events. Obviously, one of the big main events on day two was Tanahashi versus Okada, who is the reigning champ. Okada made his 12th defense of the IWGP World Champion belt, a successful defense against Hiroshi Tanahashi. But for those who want to connect New Japan to Ring of Honor, and that makes a lot of sense because Ring of Honor has a good deal with New Japan. There was a lot of Bullet Club action that happened at New Japan. Most importantly for day one, the Young Bucks, they made their first big step into the heavyweight tag team division, actually as a trio. Them and Skrull managed to win the never open weight 6-man tag team belts away from fellow Bullet Club members Tama Tonga, Tonga Loa, and Bad Luck Fale.
And the Bucks used to hold those titles with Kenny Omega at one point in time.
I believe
so. Or at 2 points in time.
At 2 points in time. So they have them again now. And on day two, following a tag match between Naito's LIJ crew and Suzuki's Suzuki Gun crew, the Young Bucks came out and challenged Evil and Sonata to a match for their – or not Evil and Sonata. Evil and
Bushi.
Maybe Bushi? I'm failing my correspondent job here. But they challenged for another title. So that'll be coming up at Dominion in June.
Wow. So they could be the never openweight 6-man titles, IWGP champions, and ROH tag champions in a matter of weeks.
They could be, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I see it happening right away, but
you gotta cash in on the fact that they got their own Funko Pops coming out.
I mean, that is true with a t-shirt and everything. So, additionally, we got to see Cody get a win over Kenny Omega's Golden Lovers partner Kota Ibushi. In what is been rightfully called one of the standout matches of the 2-day event. It's absolutely a great match. Kota Ibushi has a great way of bringing out the most sadistic and most polished elements of Cody's wrestling, which work really, really well with the dynamics with Kota, because Ibushi takes punishment, takes a good bump, but also will go into like manic and destroyer mode. And to see that against Cody is a really, really fun thing to watch. And then Omega defeated Hangman Adam Page in the main event from day one. That is also a great match to watch. There is a sequence where Paige looks like he might be getting the jump on Omega, but Omega manages to throw off Paige's attempt at a lariat with a flying V trigger, and the momentum on it is just head spinning. I mean, it's absolutely head spinning. Watch the match, watch that specific moment alone. It happens like towards the end of the match. Yeah. And then there was on night two, the big thing was the Bullet Club 10 man showdown with the Golden Lovers teaming up with Bad Luck Fale, Tama Tonga, and Tonga Loa versus Cody, the Young Bucks, Girl, and Paige.
Yeah, so the ROH Bullet Club kind of versus
OG Bullet Club.
Golden Lovers, Gorillas of Destiny, and Fale.
Yeah. And I mean, the whole thing was Denhaku marked 5 years of Bullet Club in New Japan, Bullet Club, period.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They formed May 2013.
Yeah, so they were kind of shouting that out throughout the 2 day event. There were like, you know, kimonos with like the 5th anniversary logo on it and a lot of shout outs to that. So the Bullet Club like showdown on day two, it was kind of a messy match. There were a lot of like funny moments, a lot of goofy moments, but it ended in kind of a fun twist. Skrull entered the match determined to body slam Fale. And if you don't follow New Japan Pro Wrestling, pause the podcast just to look up a picture of Bad Luck Fale so you can get an idea of what a bad idea that is for Skrull to attempt in a match like this. Even with Fale's recorded apparent weight loss, he still easily got about 150 pounds on Skrull. So that was a fun dynamic to watch. The OG crew managed to pull out a win when Skrull tried to body slam Fale, and Fale was able to turn it into a crossbody pin. And then there was a moment where Cody's being chased off by Omega, and they're both out of ring off stage, basically. And there was a big kind of a collective too sweet, and everyone was temporarily happy again. Mm. So Bullet Club for the moment is actually kind of fine, I guess.
Well, it seems like everything's fine as long as Cody and Kenny aren't around.
That's really interesting, right? That like
as soon as the two supposed leaders show up, then things get tense again, and there's so much bad feelings from everybody else.
Yeah, and I'm not the only one who's saying this, but I did say it earlier on Twitter, and there are other people who are saying this. It's starting to become apparent that like there isn't one leader of Bullet Club. There's clearly a couple of leaders of Bullet Club, and one of whom is Tama Tonga. The other big event Bullet Club related on night two was the unveiling of the new Bone Soldier. Bone Soldier was a gimmick that was very short-lived, a ridiculous gimmick that got pretty much retired the moment that it debuted. But for the last couple of weeks, they've been billing this return of Bone Soldier, which had people scratching their heads of like, why do we want that return?
Yeah, we got Bernard the Business Bear. We don't need Bone Soldier.
Exactly. But that's the ROH Bullet Club. Right?
Yeah.
So New Japan Bullet Club is going to need their own, and Tama Tonga did some headhunting and found them a brand new Bone Soldier who is going to take the junior heavyweight titles by the junior heavyweights by storm. Mm-hmm. So that's the last news from night two of Wrestling Dentaku.
Yeah, so small, and that's kind of the first Bullet Club development in a while that didn't revolve around Kenny and Cody.
Right, it's kind of outside of that, and the Bucks are even developing story in New Japan that's not dependent on Cody and Kenny.
Yeah, so we'll see where that goes. I mean, ROH TV, again this week, it seems like Cody and Omega are sort of done with each other for the time being, and now Cody has issues with Marty.
Yeah, I think that there's a shift now to focus on a growing rivalry between Marty and Cody based around who's going to get the big challenge against Castle for the belt.
Yeah, they both want Dalton Castle's ROH world title. Cody made a comment this week about like, hey, you had your shot and you blew it, sort of, which could argue was true. Supercard of Honor, Marty had his title shot and he lost. He earned another title shot in Defy or Deny. But Cody hasn't had a shot at the title since he lost it 5 months ago.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Tension between those two. I mean, I don't know. What's next? Cody and Marty finish their thing, and then Cody and Paige start having conflict. When are people going to say enough is enough with Mr. Rhodes?
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conferences and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Well, what happens with Paige in all of this? So Paige has been this like second to Cody, but is he going to be a second to Cody during a feud with Marty?
I don't know. We haven't seen, he hasn't been on TV, ROH TV a lot lately. The last time we saw him was getting chokeslammed through the table by Punishment Martinez.
Yeah, interestingly enough. And I mean, I know that he'll be in the next, like he'll be in an episode coming up, but like, I'm not even sure I remember that much about that appearance.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe he just gets sidetracked with Punishment for the next little while, and he's not around to be even a factor one way or another in Cody and Marty.
I mean, we'll talk about this more when we hopefully brief a little bit about War of the Worlds coming up. But does he have any high profile matches in the coming dates?
This Wednesday, he's Paige, Cody, and Skrull versus Rocky Romero and Roppongi 3K.
Okay.
Then he's facing Punishment Martinez in Royal Oak, Michigan.
Well, we'll believe it when we see it, won't we? Yeah. If it actually happens. Maybe he'll choke slam Punishment and that match won't start. Yeah.
And then Sunday, the main event of the whole World of Worlds tour is Cody, Skrull, Paige in the Box versus Los Ingobernables in a big 10-man tag.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward. I mean, I know that they've done things like this in the past, but I'm hoping that with all the buzz that New Japan has gotten even within the last several months, I'm really hoping that the War of the Worlds tour gets more ROH fans invested in the idea of like following New Japan as well.
Yeah, see, I'm not opposed to New Japan. I hear so many good things about it. And I make it a point to check out Wrestle Kingdom every year because, you know, that's like the real WrestleMania now.
Yeah.
So I make it a point to check out that for the great matches and all that. Beyond that, if I don't follow New Japan, it's just because, I don't know, I already feel like I watch so much wrestling in a given week. And I don't watch Raw or SmackDown anymore. So I don't know where, I just don't have the, I need more lives. I need another body who can just do the wrestling stuff without me.
You clearly need to eschew all other interests, all other like social occasions, and just dedicate yourself to watching nothing but all the quality wrestling that is out there.
But then, see, when they do stuff like War of the Worlds, it's tough for me, and I'm. Only reason I'll go on about this is because I'm sure there are other ROH fans in the same boat who watch ROH regularly, but don't follow New Japan. And ROH does the same thing. They did this when Volador Jr. came in from CMLL. They've done this with other people. ROH treats it as if all of their fans must watch New Japan, must follow these other promotions, and just know who these people are. So someone like Bushi will show up on TV, and I know nothing about this guy. I don't know his gimmick. I don't know who he is as a person. I know he's part of Los Ingobernables. I don't know what differentiates LIJ from a group like Chaos, you know?
Do you have like 5 hours? That's a good point. There's a lot that differentiates them. There's a lot of backstory there. But I do also like the fact that Ring of Honor doesn't handhold its fans and kind of, you know, respects its fans enough to know that, like, okay, those who want to catch themselves up on this are going to, and those who just want to watch the good wrestling are going to get good wrestling regardless of whether or not they know who Bushi is.
Yeah, I suppose. And I can certainly obviously enjoy the match without knowing who the people in the match are. But obviously it's highlighted more if I'm invested in the characters and the people. And so it's a tough spot. I understand they don't have the time to tell us everything about who these people are, but is there a middle ground? Is there a way they could tell us something about these factions or these people?
Well, I think that that's why content like Being the Elite is so important, right? Because we're getting, in like a 10, 15, even 20 minute video, you're getting little slice of life stuff with various people that you may not end up seeing on ROH, but have New Japan affiliation, and then you kind of recognize them when they come around on the War of the Worlds tour. So background content ends up becoming really prime for that.
Yeah, but thanks to Being the Elite, I know more about Fat Masa than I do about Sonata.
For right now. Maybe in season 3 we'll get a great arc with Sonata.
Maybe. All right, so we'll get to War of the Worlds more. Let's talk about this week's television, ROH television, because I assume everybody listening to the podcast watches that. Four matches is, well, I don't know, four matches, technically.
Technically.
Three matches and a blink and you miss it, drop your pen like Caprice Coleman and you miss it match.
Yeah, oh gosh. When you see the live TV taping, you don't hear the commentary, so we had no idea that was, you know, going to be a gag for that Shane Taylor match, that like Caprice was going to miss the entire thing because he dropped his pen.
Yeah. And we didn't see him like looking for the pen. We hear, it's like a radio play. We hear him like, what? Where's my pen? I can't find my pen. And Ian's like, the match. I don't know. It's just a fun little thing. Yeah. So yeah, Shane Taylor squashed the hell out of Ryan Nova.
Yeah. And of course, like we hear Shane Taylor in the ring talking about his 8 years of beating people up on the streets of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
But we didn't see
the test too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely had my fair share of beatdowns from Shane Taylor. Definitely people trying to, you know, paying to get my ass kicked.
Yeah.
But we didn't see the promo for Ryan Nova. So it made it kind of super sad to see it. Watching the episode, seeing that promo, just knowing that, you know, what was about to happen.
Yeah, so Nova was positioned as an enhancement wrestler here, as they like to be called these days. But this, he's kind of actually a fixture on TV now. He's sort of the... Ryan Nova is now what Will Ferrara was about a year ago, I'd say. Or maybe 2 years ago. But he's a Future of Honor guy. You see him on the YouTube channel a lot. And he's made a couple of appearances this year, like losing in tag matches as well with Eli Isom. Mm-hmm. So they're the top of like the ROH dojo guys. They're one step away from becoming regular ROH guys.
Yeah.
But he didn't get a chance to show off anything in this match. He showed he can bump. And a lot of wrestlers will tell you that's like 60% of the battle.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Shawn Michaels wouldn't have been where he was if it wasn't for his ability to do that.
Oh, absolutely. No, I think that that's a really, I wouldn't even say underrated, but it's often an overlooked skill. And a lot of these guys, especially like when you're talking your Future of Honor guys or in like New Japan, the Young Lions, like when they first start entering the ring and you start actually seeing matches of them like up against like more established talent, that's what they're going to be showing off first, because they're going to have to take those bumps. And the way that they take them, the way that they sell them, that's going to tell you a lot about the wrestler that they're going to become.
Yeah, and it's good he can do that, because his promo, not very good.
he will need development there. Definitely true.
Yeah, but we'll be... Things can change in time. Everybody had that. Everybody was at that stage where you got a 10-second promo, and then your response is, all right, I'm just going to yell the whole thing.
Absolutely. And you know what? Some guys never get that good. Some of the wrestlers never get very good on the mic. I am on record saying that Punishment Martinez probably should not talk.
Yeah. And actually, our would-be boss, Wade Keller, often comments on Bobby Roode, even to this date. He's a veteran, and at this date, he still yells 90% of his promos, and it's like, why are you yelling? You have a microphone. You don't need to raise your voice.
I mean, it's like a style preference, I guess.
I guess. It's I'm angry. I am serious about this match, and I'm going to yell at you so that you know I am serious.
Try it in real life. I mean, see what happens. Maybe it'll turn your life around. Yeah, maybe you'll see success where you never saw it.
You'll get raises. You'll get respect from your friends and family.
Yep, just yell everything.
Yeah. So Taylor squashed Ryan Nova. This ends Shane Taylor's what's the opposite of an undefeated streak? His defeated streak.
Consistently defeated streak.
Yes, he was 0-6 on the year going into this match. He's now 1-6. Which means Shane Taylor no longer has the worst singles record in ROH. Worst record in ROH 2018 now belongs to Scorpio Sky, who is 0-3. But he's a six-man champion, so what does he care? He's got gold.
Yeah. So his singles record isn't great, but at least he's got a belt.
Yeah. And so the Shane Taylor match kind of segued into our main event, Dalton Castle and the boys against the Kingdom in a six-man tag. And the Kingdom still have the six-man titles. They stole them from SoCal Uncensored Supercard of Honor. They've been hanging on the belt since. And so Matt Taven had the idea, hey, I'll pay Shane Taylor to babysit the titles at ringside. That way SoCal can't just come out and steal the belts during the match.
Yeah, and of course, as we saw, there was an attempt to get those belts back.
There was. Daniels came out, and Daniels is thinking, Shane and I are good friends. I paid this guy a lot of money. He'll help me out. And he did not.
Nope. But as I mentioned in rewatching the episode yesterday, to me, the least credible thing about any of that match that I watched was the idea that Christopher Daniels would be afraid of Shane Taylor and not take him on in a fight.
Not to mention, why didn't he... You know, Shane's a big dude, but he's one dude. Why weren't Kaz and Scorpio out there with Daniels?
I don't know.
You two distract him, third guy grab the belts. I thought Daniels was supposed to be the smartest guy in pro wrestling.
The funniest part about that was the two people seated next to Shane Taylor who were very uncomfortable about being next to Shane Taylor protecting those belts.
It was the timekeeper and the and somebody. Not the ring announcer. It wasn't Bobby Cruz. I don't know who it was.
No, I'm not actually sure who they were. Maybe they are supposed to sit there with the belts, but...
I think they won a contest.
They looked very... Well, their contest, their prize was to look really uncomfortable and sit next to Shane Taylor.
Yeah, they went to high school with Shane and in Pittsburgh. They're the locals.
They're former satisfied customers.
Yeah. So six-man tag, outside of the shenanigans of ringside, what did you think of this actual match? Dalton still got his hand tapped up, wrapped up, taped up from when Marty broke it at Supercard of Honor. Boys are highlight of the match, I would say, was when Dalton threw the boys over the top rope onto everybody else at ringside.
Massive. I mean, he was getting pops on all his entire appearance for the entire match, but that was some of the most energy that came out of the live crowd that night was when the spot with the boys throwing them one by one out the ring.
And he did it seven times, I counted. Yeah. So I think boy one got tossed four times, boy two got tossed three times, just over and over.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
So Discover, like, I have watched matches. I mean, obviously they've done this before. They've wrestled as a three-person tag team before. I've decided definitively that Boy One is better at giving strikes, and Boy Two is better at taking bumps.
I felt like Boy Two was in the match more tonight. Ian Riccaboni pointed out Boy Two has the lighter hair, like he's gone blonde.
Oh, see, I think Boy One is the blonde and Boy Two is the dark-haired.
At the start of the match, Riccaboni clearly said on commentary, Boy Two taking in, he's got the lighter hair.
That changed halfway through the match, if you notice.
Yeah, I did. At one point, Boy Two all of a sudden became Boy One. Even the commentators can't keep these guys apart.
Well, they're you know, it's like the Geminis. They're truly one being. It's just that they're split into two.
It's like the Bella Twins. Until one of the boys gets breast implants, we're never going to be able to tell them apart.
They have to. I mean, I will be curious how that alters the costuming.
Yes, that's that could be a super progressive storyline. Is one of them comes out as trans, and it's no longer the boys. It's now the boy and the girl.
Yep. I mean, that I fully can see.
Or they both come out as genderqueer and they become Dalton Castle and the people.
Yeah. You know what? And if anyone can make that storyline work and do it actually like in a way that wouldn't offend every single person on the planet, I think it would be Dalton Castle.
Yes. And gender doesn't matter when you're going up against the kingdom, because man, woman, other, you're all Melvins.
Yes, exactly. In the eyes of Matt Taven, there is no gender. There are only Melvins and non-Melvins.
Yes. So Taven ended up getting the pinfall. Not really surprising. Hit the climax on one of the boys. Got the pin. A little beat down after the match with a chair on Dalton Castle's injured hand. And this is all setting up Dalton Castle and Matt Taven for the world title this Wednesday. War of the Worlds in Lowell, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Is this? I did come away from this feeling like it was too little, too late, though.
Really? How so?
Well, going back to like at least the first episode of the year in January, if not earlier than that, Matt Taven's been saying he wants a title shot. He's coming for the world title. So this has been in the works for 4 months, if not longer. He's finally getting his title shot, and this is the first time it was mentioned on TV, like the last segment before. 2 days before he gets his title is when they finally sort of address this. And meanwhile, we've already got Cody and Marty Skrull talking about wanting to face Dalton Castle for the title in June. So I don't know. Does anybody feel like Taven's actually going to win the belt?
I mean, I certainly don't. I'd be curious if there were some, you know, what theories people have as far as him getting it and the reasons as to why, but I think this is going to be a quickly discarded shot.
Yeah, so then you kind of go back. I don't know. I mean, every world title match especially should feel important and be treated as a big deal. So you want to dedicate some sort of TV time to this match, but if all you're going to dedicate is one segment on the last episode before the live event, is it worth it? Should Taven even be getting a title shot? Why not have this be like a non-title proving ground match or something, rather than like this is what we've been building to all year? Taven's going to lose and on a Wednesday night in Lowell, and then what?
Yeah, and there's still this weird running thing with him and the Kingdom having these belts that don't belong to them.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess that's the point. Is back in January they started to set up this story of Matt Taven's going for the world title. And then they changed their mind and said, actually, he's going to do this six-man feud instead. So we'll just get the title shot out of the way so we can close that chapter.
It's very possible this is just like a period on the sentence that they needed to have.
Yeah. Or maybe it's a semicolon and we do a kind of, you know, Taven's the one who gets the big title shot at Final Battle in December. We come back to this and it turns out that this all of this is just like a red herring, or, you know.
Or maybe Matt Taven wins and we have a new like champion, and then it's Skrull and Cody going up against Taven.
Then Skrull and Cody are bickering about which one of them has to. You have to face Taven. No, you. No, I don't want to. I don't like that guy. No, I don't want to face him either. It's the opposite of both of them wanting to face Castle.
Yeah.
They both don't want to face Taven because they hate him.
I mean, I think Cody would face Taven no problem. There's still a lot of bad blood there.
Literally. Last match was a first blood match.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do get the sense that this is kind of the closing of the Taven world title feud storyline for now. And starting next week on TV, it's going to be Kingdom and SoCal for the six-man titles. Dalton, Marty, and Cody in a triple threat. That's my sense. I don't know. We'll see. What about, hey, another tag match on the show. The final, well, I don't know. That's a question for you. Coast to Coast, Beer City Bruiser and Brian Malonis. They kind of set this up before the match. We got the footage from the episode with the Tag Team Gauntlet, where Bruiser Malonis beat up LSG backstage, forcing Shaheem Ali to wrestle a handicap match. Ali lost. So before this big tag match, we had a promo from Coast to Coast, and they essentially vowed that they were going to get their final revenge tonight. And they did. They got the clean win with a Coast to Coast on Brian Malonis. Clean win over the big man tag team. Is this the end of this feud?
I think it is, but I can't say for certain. There's not a lot about this feud that like makes me want it to continue for any real reason. But I feel like the clean win is kind of the pitch to me that it's going to be like that we're moving on now.
Yeah, or if it were to continue, you would have thought like Bruiser Malonis would have beat them up after the match or something.
Exactly, but that didn't happen. That wasn't even something that like occurred like at the end of the like, because obviously seeing this taped live, like there were stuff that gets cut off. But no, it was clean. It was like a clean finish, fairly straightforward match even. So not a whole lot of like, not a whole lot of trickery or not a whole lot of even like heel moves. I feel like this is just that this kind of end caps it.
Yeah. So Coast to Coast are getting, I'd say they're getting one of the biggest pushes in ROH in 2018.
Yeah.
Like in terms of consistent pushes. I mean, they were start of this year, they hadn't won any matches ever. And since then they've beat War Machine, Bruiser Malonis, Motor City Machine Guns. Mm-hmm. Who am I forgetting? I know there's others in there. The Dogs.
Most likely, yeah.
They're facing TK O'Ryan and Vinnie Marseglia this Wednesday in Lowell. Got to assume they're probably going to go over there as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah, what is this all going towards? I mean, ROH is now dedicating some serious momentum behind Coast to Coast. So, yeah. Like, where are they going to be in the next 6 months?
I mean, you would imagine that on this trajectory and with the tag division having as few teams as it does, they've got to be heading to an eventual showdown with the Briscoes for the tag titles.
Yeah.
The question is when. You know, they booked that for Best in the World next month. I feel like that's too soon. You could tell a fun underdog story and have them lose, go back to the drawing board, train some more, build towards a rematch. But it certainly seems like if they were to book them and the Briscoes anytime in the near future, nobody's buying into them winning.
Yeah, even with the like, even with this push that they're being given, even with this like, you know, this run that they have, there's not a credible story behind the idea that they would just go up against the Briscoes within the next like month or two and get the title.
Yeah, it still feels like you've got Briscoes, Young Bucks, arguably the Machine Guns in one tier, and then all the other tag teams in another tier.
Yeah. It's funny how this push is really working for Coast to Coast, though, because every time that they get these wins, they come out to their next match and they wrestle even more confidently. They look even better in the ring. And maybe that's like somewhat of the like, you know, the mental persuasion that so many wins will give a viewer when they're watching a team like that. But they definitely are wrestling better and better each win that they get.
Yeah. And ROH, we've talked about this before, very good about wins and losses matter. So even if they're not mentioning their actual record on air, we have in the back of our mind, we remember that, hey, they won their last match, they've won the match before that, and they're on a roll and they're doing well. And slowly that perception of them changes from, oh, these are that enhancement team that beat War Machine, to, oh, these are those guys who win a lot of matches.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're not winning against like the biggest talent in the Fed, but they aren't getting bad wins either. They're getting good matches out of the people that they're going up against.
Do you think do you see a notable perception of them once the bell rings? Like a change from now to who they were back in January?
Yeah, I definitely do. I definitely see a change. I see them working really well. I see them building in the ring more. I see them taking bumps really well. Obviously we talked about that a little while ago, but like they're just, everything that they're doing is getting a bit more confident now. You could see that really in the like finisher too. Like I'm starting to notice their moves more, because I think that they're performing them. They're actually executing them with a lot more polish than maybe they were even doing 6 months ago.
And how is response in the building during this match, for instance? Like, are the fans getting behind these guys?
Yeah, I think so. To be terribly honest, I don't remember how much of a bump that they got. They were definitely coming out to some support. But then again, I think that Beer City Bruiser and Brian Malonis get a fair amount of support in that crowd too. I mean, you know, we're, you know, Pittsburghers. There's, you know, Beer City Bruiser and Brian Malonis are definitely guys that people in our crowd are going to root for. But
yeah, when your gimmick is we're big fat guys who drink a lot of beer,
you know,
are you really going to get wrestling fans to boo that?
Like,
kind of like, that seems the opposite of how to get heat in wrestling.
Yeah, like I don't want to paint my town as like, you know, like a town of bumpkins, but like, you know, we're a Rust Belt city. Like, we like beer. We're all, you know, possibly a little bit rounder than we would like to be. Like, we definitely are total, you know, we can see ourselves in those.
If anything, you should have, oh, you want Bruiser and Malonis to get real heat? Have them come out next week and say that they've like sworn off beer and they're only drinking protein shakes and like veggie smoothies now, and look down at anybody who does drink beer. Instant heat.
Oh yeah, they become strict vegans.
Yeah, overnight, straight edge and vegan, and they're just like, you're all cowards and weak for not following our lifestyle.
That's actually a really good wrestling gimmick.
Well, okay, so we talked about Coast to Coast on the up and up. It's just up to ROH to find more teams for them to beat, I guess. But where do Bruiser and Malonis go after this defeat?
I could not tell you. I mean, they're not going anywhere, right? Like, they're kind of like a comfort food, right? They're like kind of a comfort team in that, like, I don't know that they're going to have a great tear, but they're not going anywhere. You're going to continually see them.
Yeah, they're treated better than the dogs.
Yeah, oh, gosh.
And even Modus and Machine Guns as of late.
Yes.
So, I don't know. But, yeah, like, you're looking at the tag roster, and in terms of babyface teams that Bruiser Malonis can feud with now, there's the Young Bucks, and there's the Modus City Machine Guns if they stay together. That's about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's potential there. I mean, there's definitely potential for either the individual members too, like for Bruiser, for Brian, like to be messing around on matches like you saw at Supercard of Honor. So there's a number of stories that they can go with that, but there aren't a lot of like specific tag team rivalries that they can chase right now in ROH.
Yeah, I thought maybe this is the time for them and Silas to go into the six-man division, but Silas is the TV champion, so that doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I don't see that shifting, but that would be interesting.
I'm sure that's a well they'll go to at some point, but as long as Silas is the television champion, probably doesn't make much sense.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I guess we'll find out who... I'll be intrigued to see what happens the next time we see Bruiser Malonis, whether it's another squash match over Nova and Isam, or if it's a feud against somebody else, and if so, whom? I don't know.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's skip ahead a little. Another person who's kind of, again, seemed a little directionless as of late, and we've talked about that in the past, and I'm sure other people have as well, Jay Lethal.
Yes, and even he has, like, so maybe you thought he was directionless. Maybe we all felt like he was a little directionless. Well, according to his promo, he's feeling a little directionless too.
So, and it's worth noting, this is the second week in a row now where stuff that fans and people have been saying online has been utilized on screen in a promo. Last week on this show, we had Dalton Castle responding to fans saying that he's not world championship material. And we had Cody responding to fans saying that Dalton Castle's title reign has been a flop. This week we have Jay Lethal responding to fans saying that he's directionless and that he's not really, like, he doesn't have a purpose or a sense of goals in ROH. So, I don't know, before we get into the promo, what do you make of that?
I mean, I guess maybe I'm not a great wrestling fan in this way, or I am like just a mark in general, but I feel like with Jay Lethal, you're always getting good matches no matter what he's up to. I thought his match against Castle at the 16th anniversary. I think his match against Castle was awesome. I think every match that he does is either like very, very solid to great. I enjoyed his work during the Bound by Honor shows. So I don't see him as directionless so much as just in the midst of in between stories right now. But I like this promo a lot for giving him kind of a newly found momentum to like come back to go on a tear of defeating all the guys who he may have been defeated by recently. And I think that's a good track for him to go on, because basically it's just Lethal saying like, well, I'm just going to go back through the roster of guys that I need to defeat again and defeat them all. And you're going to be reminded of how great I am. And that's fine. That's totally fine by me, because he is great. And it'll be really interesting to see him do this tear.
Yeah, I mean, Lethal's mission statement ever since losing the world title was that he wanted to become world champion again. Makes sense. Most of the guys in the company want to be world champion. Almost all the singles wrestlers, that's their goal. And that's true of almost any wrestling promotion, right? So he's made that statement, but, I mean, even a couple weeks ago on Coleman's Pulpit, Caprice was kind of making fun of him for that. Like, yeah, okay, you said that in 2016. You said that in 2017. You're not world champion now. You're going to say that next year too? Like, poking fun of the fact, like, okay, you say this, but none of your actions indicate that this is actually, like, that you're actually trying to pursue this goal necessarily. You seem fine to just go out there and have a good match against Jonathan Gresham or teaming with Tanahashi against the Briscoes in these, like, good matches, but no momentum behind them.
Yeah.
So,
see, and I think...
Yeah, no.
I think it's a slow build. I do, because I can imagine a 2019 where Jay Lethal is champion once again.
Well, and I loved this promo, because it gave clear states, clear stakes, and it said, like, this is my plan. Not just I want to be champion, but here's how I'm going to achieve my championship. I want to be champion. ROH management tells me I need to pick up some more wins, which is kind of ridiculous because he's only lost once in 2018, and he's got, like, the third best record out of anyone in the company.
Right. But
setting that aside, we'll buy into the idea that they told him he needs to pick up more wins. And he said, okay, well, I'm not going to pick up more wins by beating Jonathan Gresham again, or by asking for a match against Rhett Titus. I'm going to go back and beat the guys who beat me to prove that I'm the best. That's great.
Yeah.
Now, he's only lost once in 2018. So that was my thing. I had to do my research to see how far back he wants to go, because Dalton Castle is the only person who's defeated him in the last 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, that's right.
So I don't know how that, when you look at it that way, it's like Lethal doesn't really have that much to prove. But I don't know. If you go back farther than that, in November, he did lose to Punishment Martinez. He did lose to Matt Taven. And going all the way back to September, he lost to Silas Young. So maybe that's going to be like the first names on his checklist?
I think that we're going to see that. I think we're going to start seeing that very soon.
Lethal and Punishment, Lethal and Taven. Lethal and Silas could be fun. Jay Lethal still has the record in the record books, he's the best TV champion of all time. He's held it for more days than anybody else. And it's not even close. It's like a long margin between him and number two, who I think might be like Eddie Edwards.
Do we see him? I mean, obviously we're building towards like the world champion, but like, do we see him trying to take on the TV title?
I don't know. I mean, I'd definitely be down for a rekindling of his feud with Silas. That was a pretty good... Every feud... I don't know. I'm a mark for Silas. Every feud Silas has is, like, my favorite feud with, like... Anytime I talk about Dalton Castle, my favorite Dalton Castle feud is his with Silas. Same with Lethal. So, yeah, I don't know. I could see him almost taking the TV title just to spite Silas.
Yeah, definitely.
But also not to demean the title. I mean, the TV title is what got Lethal into the world picture in the first place. If you remember back to the days of the House of Truth, mm-hmm. That's the whole thing, is he became the longest reigning TV champion and said, I want the world title too. And he held both at the same time. That's what made him the franchise player for ROH.
So just imagine 2019, a complete repeat of that TV title, world title.
And the return of Truth Martini.
Oh, gosh.
Speaking of Pauly Shore lookalikes,
I mean, if I can X something out of that rehash, Truth Martini would be the first thing to go.
Well, yeah, maybe. Maybe he can just bring back Taylor Hendricks or something instead. I don't know. So, yeah, Lethal has direction. That's nice. I'm excited to see where it goes from here. And I have, yep. I have a feeling by one of your cryptic comments that you already know.
Yep.
And well, he's wrestling on the World of Worlds tour, of course, doing lots of take matches on the World of Worlds tour, teaming with Jay White and Chucky T one night. He's teaming with Dalton, Kenny King, and Flip Gordon on another night.
That's right, against two.
Oh my God, I just lost it. He is teaming with Dalton Castle, Flip Gordon, why can't I see this? And against Los Ingobernables de Japón. 8-man take. Takahashi, Bushi, Evil, and Sanada against Castle, Lethal, King, and Gordon.
Yeah, that's going to be great.
Yeah, and also in Royal Oak, he's wrestling a four-way against Taven, King, and Skrull. So maybe there's a chance to get his pinfall over Taven and knock that off his list.
Ooh, or just set up like a future big match.
Yeah, him and Kenny King. Kenny King's kind of needing something to do right now as well. He's a little bit lost now that he's dropped the title.
Yeah, now that like that title battle is finally closed for the moment between him and Silas, Kenny needs something to do.
Yeah. Maybe he can reunite with All Night Express, be the All Dog Express. That's my pitch. All right, we had one more match on this week's show, one actual match, none of my fantasy booking for my ROH parody federation. my all-comedy ROH show. Jonathan Gresham, the Octopus, versus Will Ferrara, Little Willie. Rhett Titus vowed that Will Ferrara was going to turn the Octopus into calamari. That's my favorite line of the week, even though Ian Riccoboni hated it.
Yeah.
I've said it before, God help me, I don't know why, but I love the dogs. They make me laugh every time. And I don't know why. They're so dumb. And they never win. And they're so cheesy. But every time Rhett calls him Little Willy, I like giggle. I don't know why.
I'm on the opposite end, only in that I tend to really just I think I'm in the opinion of a lot of people where I find them really annoying, the repeated shtick, and like, you know, there's a whole intro speech that gets given every time. Yeah. And
it's like the New Day.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're either into it for its own sake, like you either get into its like stupid fun, or you just can't. And I think for me, it's one of those things where I'm just like, it's not something that I can plug into. I can get into a lot of like stupid things in wrestling, but this is one of the things that just doesn't, like, I don't laugh at as easily. That being said, I was really surprised by this match, and coming back to it, I remember liking it more than I thought I would at the taping, but coming back to it on the episode, it's a much tighter match than I would have assumed.
Yeah, and Coleman and Rick Abani did a good job of telling that story, which is, hey, you might be sleeping on the dogs because they never win and they're so goofy and they're barking and biting the ropes and stuff during the match. But Will Ferrer can actually wrestle when it calls for it, and he showed that off against Gresham. This was the pure wrestling that Gresham likes to talk about, right? Like lots of arm drags and roll throughs and bridges.
Mm-hmm. Lots of good speed in this match. Lots of really good like matching of speed.
Yeah.
And like there's not even that many cheap shots taken in this. There's like a little bit of fuss made over like a slap or two. But really it is like a fairly technical, fairly straightforward match, you know, until like the end. But for the most part, it's a pretty cleanly done, pretty quick moving match that shows both of the guys performing pretty darn like expertly.
Yeah, and it's the opposite of both approaches have their merits. The Shane Taylor match had its merits because he looked totally dominating. He just four moves beats this guy in 37 seconds. This match kind of the opposite. You might go in saying, okay, Will Ferrer is like a jobber. It took Gresham 9 minutes to beat him. That makes Gresham look bad. But I would take the stance of it makes Gresham look good because he beat a viable opponent. He beat a good wrestler, right? And doesn't that means more?
Yeah, absolutely.
It means more when the Yankees beat the Red Sox than when the Yankees beat some high school team.
Well, no, exactly. I don't think that like Lil Willy came off as a jobber at all in this. I think that he got to showcase his strengths as a singles wrestler, and Gresham got to show yet again that like he shouldn't be underestimated, and that he can not only elevate himself, but he can elevate an opponent.
Yeah, and I still had Rhett Titus on commentary to amuse me.
Like, there you go.
during the match, there's one point where Ferrer. He does something against Gresham, I can't remember what, and he yells out, like, that's why I'm Big Willie. And immediately on commentary, Titus corrects him and says, I have to butt in here, but he's actually a Little Willie.
I think I laughed at that too, so.
Oh, and okay, here's something. Will Ferrer had the size advantage in this match.
Yes.
He's 5 inches taller than Gresham and 16 pounds heavier.
I mean, as far as height goes, I think that Gresham is the shortest guy in ROH,
He's 5'4". That's pretty short.
That's pretty short. I mean, he's my height, so yeah. That's...
Average height for most adult men is around 5'10". And okay. for women, it's 5'5", so he's even shorter than the average women.
Well, I mean, there you go. So, but as far as weight... goes, that's not surprising either. I would say as far as weight, probably the only person who's under Gresham is Cheeseburger.
Yeah, I'd have to imagine everybody's under Cheeseburger. Nobody's under Cheeseburger. I mean, the whole reason he got his name on air was, I think it was maybe BJ Whitmer who said to him, like, God, man, go eat a cheeseburger, because he was so skinny.
And
it's stuck for life, and now he sells so much merchandise in Japan.
Yes, oh my gosh, it's so funny the difference between Cheeseburger and ROH and Cheeseburger in New Japan. Cheeseburger in New Japan is like very over. Yeah. Cheeseburger here isn't like people.
He's popular,
like,
but he doesn't win.
But he wins matches in New Japan.
Yeah, usually tag matches, but matches.
Primarily tag matches. Yeah. But then again, in New Japan, one of the biggest guys is Toru Yano, and Yano makes Cheeseburger look like a technical powerhouse.
Yeah.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
And we'll see Cheeseburger's teaming up with his mentor, Jushin Thunder Liger, a couple of times on War of the Worlds, I believe.
That's entertaining. I mean, Liger's always a really great, he's a living legend. He's a working legend, but having him team up with even someone like Cheeseburger is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, and they have they've been on-air friends for a while now. Liger bestowed the Shotei palm strike upon Cheeseburger.
It's a true blessing.
Yep. So last thing, so Gresham picks up the win over Ferrara with a kind of bridging pin.
Mm-hmm.
After the match, Rhett Titus shows up. The two of them are dog stomping on Gresham. And the Motor City Machine Guns make the save.
That's right.
Was it last week on this very show when we said, what do you do with the Machine Guns now? I don't know. Maybe they should be with like Jonathan Gresham and like go after the six-man titles?
I would love to say that was like really great premonition on my part. But it was actually just a spoiler. And I don't apologize because I don't think anyone got spoiled.
No. And it wasn't like a random premonition. We pointed out last week, these guys are all part of Search and Destroy together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which Caprice Coleman brought up on commentary too to remind us. I love that too, that ROH makes use of its history. They acknowledge the past. They don't try to forget like past stories and things. We had a similar, a couple of weeks ago, we had Hiromu Takahashi against Kazarian. And they even referenced the fact that, hey, because Takahashi was teaming with the Addiction way back before Scorpio Sky. And they like brought that back together, those like disparate stories.
Yeah, I think that that's something that ROH does really well. And I think it's something that, unlike WWE, unlike feds that like have to keep their wrestlers so locked under the identities that they are in that fed, like ROH has the freedom to acknowledge the fact that these guys have had careers outside of ROH. They've had like legacies and built big followings in other federations. So, and it's okay to call on that, and it's okay to make mention of it, and it only makes the world of their wrestling within ROH richer.
Yeah, it makes everybody feel more important and feel like, like bigger, bigger stakes. I keep saying the word stakes this episode, and I'm vegetarian. I don't know what's going on.
This is the steak episode.
That's the title. Raising the stakes. So I don't know. Here we are with the Machine Guns again, and Sabin and Shelly are still hanging out. Meanwhile, when they lost the Briscoes, 2 weeks ago at Bound by Honor, they kind of said, like, hey, if we lose this match, we're probably done as a team. They're still hanging out. They're still coming out to rescue their buddy. I don't know. What's happening with the Machine Guns?
I don't know. I'm still hoping that they weather through this and pull through, and if they can pull through plus some, six-man tag action, that would be awesome. I'd love to see Gresham pair up with them again.
Yeah. Oh, this is something that I meant to bring up earlier, but I kind of forgot. So the main event, the six-man tag, after the match, you have the Kingdom triple-teaming Dalton Castle. The boys are down at ringside.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of expecting SoCal and Censor to make the save.
I was actually expecting that too at the taping.
Not because they like Dalton or because they want to save him, but just despite the Kingdom.
Yeah.
And to kind of tease like a babyface turn, because in this feud between the Kingdom and SoCal, SoCal have definitely been positioned as the babyfaces. They had their titles stolen.
Yeah, I mean, they're the heels right now, right? But at least they're the heels that actually legitimately won versus the, you know, the cheating jerks who didn't.
Yeah. So the fact that they didn't show up there really raised some question marks for me. I mean, did they not come to the save because SoCal Uncensored aren't going to be turning babyface? This feud with the Kingdom is going to be just a short kind of one-match thing. And then afterwards, the plan is for them both to stay heel as separate trios?
I think that SoCal Uncensored stays heel. I don't think there's any kind of babyface turn. I think that they didn't come make the save because they're not going to interfere in anything that doesn't directly benefit them.
Okay, so you think we're going to get a heel versus heel six-man match at some point?
Sure, absolutely. Because like I said, like they're different kinds of heels. I think we're talking about heels who like still have like they have a complete pride in what they do versus Matt Taven and the Kingdom. Like they're willing to, you know, lie, cheat, steal, whatever to get where they want to go.
Yeah. And I mean, a couple weeks ago on TV, we saw Punishment Martinez versus Shane Taylor and fans were pretty invested in that match. So if it's hard hitting or if it's fast paced, fans, I think, are a little bit more willing to watch a group of heels go at each other. They're not just going to sit there and be like, well, I don't like any of these guys, so I don't care.
Sure. Because I mean, ultimately it's who is more likable within the moment. And if you put up, you know, SCU versus Matt Taven and the Kingdom, like, those who need a more likable group to root for, you're going to root for SCU because they're the ones who deserve to have their belts at the very least.
Yeah, and they're the veterans. So whether we like them as right now or not as characters, we respect Daniels and Cass for everything they've done.
Sure, exactly.
So yeah, I don't know. If we do get the heel versus heel feud, presumably whoever comes out of that with the titles lawfully is going to need opponents. Maybe that's where the Machine Guns and Gresham come in, because there's not too many other trios in ROH.
No, I mean, there's always, you know, the Bucks will pair with Hangman or pair with even Flip.
Yeah, even Flip Gordon if they're desperate.
Yeah, get some more flung.
Yeah, I don't know. That's all a ways away. It feels like Best in the World is the next big show we're building to. So if, you know, if we get SoCal and the Kingdom, it's probably going to be then. And that's not until June 29th.
Yep.
So if we're looking at, like, who's going to face them afterwards, I mean, that's 2 months from now.
Yeah, there's still quite a bit of story to tell. And there's a whole other round of episodes that will air after these Pittsburgh episodes air. So who knows what they'll be doing with the show at that point.
Yeah, and the War of the Worlds tour, there might be more house shows or, like, Honor Club events late May or early June. I haven't looked that far ahead on the calendar, but wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
So War of the Worlds tour this week, 4 stops, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, all available on Honor Club, which is pretty cool, especially if you're a New Japan fan, because these shows are loaded with New Japan talents. I think Los Ingobernables are wrestling like every night in some combination.
I think you get an LIJ match at least once every show.
Yeah, and then we've got some appearances from members of Chaos. You've got Switchblade Jay White. We've got Jushin Thunder Liger. Maybe some others in there too.
Yeah, you've got Roppongi 3K with Rocky Romero. So you're going to get some Sho and Yo, which is really
exciting. We haven't
seen
them since the days of the Tempura Boys. And they've certainly, they're like coast to coast. They've come a long way in the past 5-6 months.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're getting that coast to coast treatment in New Japan right now. They're winning. They're on a tear.
Yeah. So for everybody who's making fun of the dogs right now, 6 months from now, this is where they're going to be. Just you wait.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
And then Ryan Nova and Eli Isom will be the new dogs instead.
Oh, boy. Well, hopefully they'll get their mic patter down.
So, I mean, we don't have the time. We'd need another hour or two of this show to go through every match on all four of these events. But we've got the cards so far in front of us. What's What's your pick for Match of the Night Wednesday in Lowell, Massachusetts?
On Wednesday. Okay.
We got Castle on Taven for the world title. We got the Briscoes against Flip and Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yeah, that's going to be really cool. I'm really looking forward to seeing a lot of these matches. Briscoes versus Flip Gordon and Jushin Liger is going to be fun to watch. But I have to say, for Wednesday, it's the Young Bucks versus Hiromu and Bushi. I love seeing Takahashi and Bushi pair up in New Japan, and I think that they have a great style that will be very compatible with the Young Bucks. There's going to be a lot of spots in that match, but I don't know that it'll be a spot fest because Hiromu has a really good way of grounding things.
Yeah, lots of tag matches on this card, actually. I think there's like two. Is there one? I think, wow, Castle and Taven is the only singles match on this card.
That is not, I mean, that to me.
Every other match is either a tag match or a six-man tag match.
Yeah, that to me is a really big, that's a New Japan-influenced decision right there. Because if you watch a New Japan show.
Yeah, like, they do a lot of those.
Vast majority are
six-man
tag
and eight-man and ten-man tags.
Yes. Yeah. It can be exhausting, but I think for this audience, for ROH audiences, it's going to be really fun to see a lot of talent at once.
Yeah. I mean, so we've got the other members of LIJ are going up against Silas, Boozer, and Malonis. We've got, just announced today, this is an interesting combo. Tennille Dashwood, we haven't seen in a while, teaming with Brandi Rhodes to take on Deonna Purrazzo and Skylar.
Oh, okay.
I don't. I'm intrigued because I'm always intrigued by the women's division. But that's interesting. I don't know. The match I think of Wednesday I'm most curious about is got to be SoCal Uncensored against Jay Lethal, Chucky T, and Switchblade Jay White. If only because Lethal, Chucky, and Jay White seems like a really weird group.
Yes, that is a really weird trio right there. I mean, what are you looking at? You're looking at Jay Lethal, like one of the top talents of ROH, who can do pretty much everything. You've got Chucky T, who can do some good technical stuff. And then you have Jay White, who is the, you know, US IWGP champ. And
now he's a 50s greaser.
And starting to like kind of morph into a Lewis Carroll like head case. It's going to be really interesting to see how that plays off with SoCal Uncensored and how, you know, SEU's got a very defined point of view. They have a very specific way of doing things as a trio now. They have, you know, compatible strengths that they use effectively. This kind of mashup of Jay Lethal and Chucky T and Jay White is going to not have that same cohesiveness. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out.
And I'm curious to see if there's fallout from one night of War of the Worlds is going to reverberate through the rest of the tour. So, you know, the teams who win and lose on Wednesday night, is that going to affect them on Friday and Saturday?
Seeing how the pairs are so mixed up and the matches are just so scrambled throughout, I don't know that there'll be a lot of reverberations throughout the tour. I could be wrong about that, but to me, it looks like there's a lot of scramble.
Well, like Friday night, we've got Jay White is defending the IWGP United States Championship against Punishment Martinez. So right away, my thinking is maybe there's a chance Punishment shows up Wednesday night and gets involved in that six-man match.
Yeah, I don't see it, but I will be curious. I'll be watching. I'll definitely be watching for it.
Yeah. So what's your Friday night? War of the Worlds, heading to my hometown, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Born and raised there. I'll be moving back sometime this summer. I'm not attending the show.
Yeah, that's right.
Because this is so weird to me. There's still tickets available for the Chicago show this Sunday. Toronto, meanwhile, sold out in like January.
Oh, wow.
It was honestly one of these things where sometime in February, early February, one day I'm watching ROH television and I'm thinking, I wonder if they're coming to Toronto anytime soon. And I go to the website and I say, oh, they are. They're coming in May. And they're sold out. I hadn't even heard that they were coming to town. They hadn't even announced the event. They hadn't announced a single match. And the tickets were already sold out. And so now, like, my only hope, if I want to go, is StubHub, where tickets are going for hundreds of dollars, which I can't – afford or justify.
Yeah.
So I'm bummed that I'm not seeing. Last time I saw ROH live was, I don't know, many years ago. It was so many years ago that I got to witness the man now known as Kevin Owens win the ROH World Championship for the first time.
Oh, wow. I mean, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was cool. Getting to see him beat Davey Richards for the title.
Yeah, that is a while ago, isn't it? That's what? 2013?
Yeah, 5 or 6 years, I'd guess, without looking it up. And I probably should know this off the top of my head, but I don't. Anyway, so they're coming to my hometown, Toronto. I'm going to be missing. I'll be watching Honor Club, but I won't be there live in attendance. Which, you know, on the other hand, I'm not that. It's kind of a weird card again. I don't know. What do you make of this night?
It's a weird card. You do have what I think is going to be. I'm really excited to see the Jay White versus Punishment Martinez match. If only because I feel like both of them have very weird energy in the ring, and that could be very compatible. It could also end up being a mess.
Well, it's a callback to their feud in ROH last year as well.
That is right, actually, yeah.
Yeah, they feuded for a long time before White kind of left ROH and went off to New Japan permanently. So yeah, I like it in that sense. Again, like calling back to ROH history.
Yeah, but Jay White has come a long way, even in the last couple of months, in defining his character. Yeah. The difference between him wrestling in January and February versus him wrestling now, he's starting to really figure out how to wrestle within character. And that's gonna be cool to see him go up against Punishment again, because Punishment obviously like knows how to wrestle in character and stay in character. Jay is figuring that out, has figured it out, and it's working really well for his ring presence.
Yeah, I love that in wrestling when you can have a long-term rivalry. So you go back to it every couple of years or maybe once a year, and you get to see, hey, here's these two guys. They fought before, but they're fighting again. But now they're at different stages in their career. They're different characters, or they're on different trajectories. And how does that influence this matchup versus where you saw them wrestle 2 years ago?
Yeah, precisely. It's why it's great to have a long-term investment in wrestling.
Exactly. So is that that's your match of the night for Friday in Toronto?
That one, I think there's a SCU match against the Chaos team of Rocky Romero, yeah, and Roppongi.
That's for the six-man titles.
Uh-huh. And, of course, I look forward to seeing Cody versus Jushin Liger.
Of course.
I'm curious if Cody's going to – I mean, I imagine that Cody will win it, but I'm really curious to see.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
And okay, so here's one. Do you know are you familiar with the Super Smash Brothers?
I'm actually not incredibly.
Evil Uno and Stu Grayson.
I'm not incredibly familiar with them, actually. I've seen the team name before, but I don't think I've seen them wrestle.
I've never heard of them. They are ROH, you know, them and the Bucks, again, feuded in ROH many years ago, but this was before my time. So I don't know how, this must have been at least 9 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, wow.
I don't know. But I'm mildly curious because I know nothing about these two guys. And I do know, based on their Twitter, that the Young Bucks handpicked them to be their opponents.
Interesting.
The Bucks were essentially told, you can face anybody you want. Who do you want to face? And they chose these two. So if that doesn't make you curious, I mean.
Well, and I'm already curious over what a match between Beer City Bruiser and current recently retitled Intercontinental Champ Tetsuya Naito is going to be like.
Yeah, Bruiser's been getting a lot of screen time lately. Like when they did Honor Rising in Japan, the ROH New Japan show back in, I think, February, Bruiser got to wrestle like both nights, where a lot of ROH guys didn't make that journey.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm missing and other people are seeing.
I don't know. Maybe it's just the, you know, his body type for offers variety in a way.
Yeah, it's possible. Big guys in New Japan tend to be, don't tend to be as many of them. So they tend to be utilized in different ways than you would imagine over here.
Yeah, and I mean, not to say that like that's the only reason he's getting these matches, obviously. But anytime you can, if you can find a niche that helps you stand out from everybody else, mm-hmm. that's going to benefit you. That's true of any field, obviously, not just pro wrestling. That's true about music or anything else.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it's important in wrestling as much as anything, because you can be a great wrestler, you can have an interesting character, you can, you know, even get a push that's going to get you a lot of wins, but ultimately you do need things that will make you stand out. So even just your winning record isn't going to be the only thing that people are thinking about.
And if what helps you stand out is having a beer gut, so be it. I guess. So then Saturday, we move into Royal Oak, Michigan. Briscoes defend the tag titles against Naito and Bushi. We've also got SoCal Uncensored going up against Jushin Thunder Liger, Cheeseburger, and Flip Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the rematch of Hangman Page versus Punishment Martinez. That might be like the first match of these three dates, which is ROH versus ROH.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Young Bucks, Machine Guns, and Roppongi 3K in a triple threat.
Yep, looking forward to that one a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, my match of the night, I'm hoping we get to see Paige Martinez for real this time.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I get what they were trying to do with the fake out at Bound by Honor, but and with the choke slam and everything, but I really do want to see an actual match between the two of them.
Well, I get the feeling we will. They're not going to bait and switch us twice, are they?
I mean, they could. Like I said, like it could be Paige coming out and getting the jump on Punishment and ending them before it begins. That would be interesting, too. They haven't done as much with Paige's like more aggressive tendencies recently in ROH.
His stuff with Kaz was really like the last time we saw that.
Yeah, so maybe it's the time to bring back that like wild energy that he had right, you know, since he started getting a really big ROH push.
I could see that. I'm on board with that. Well, and what do you think about they've said the main event is going to be the tag titles. You think Naito and Bushi are going to win the tag titles?
Probably not.
But it's the main event.
I know.
We should be going in. Do you think Shane Taylor is going to beat Evil?
No.
No.
I don't think so. I don't believe that his win on Ryan Nova has prepared him for...
You don't think it's propelled him to those heights?
I mean, he's going up against Evil.
Yeah.
The
embodiment of pure evil.
The embodiment of pure... That's even his finisher, pure evil.
Yeah. Taylor versus Evil. I'm co-hosting a podcast with Fear. Like...
Wrestling has officially entered its like doom period.
Yeah, I blame Infinity War.
Yes.
It's making everything all gritty and dark now.
Yes, absolutely. We're all disintegrating very slowly.
And then Sunday night, the tour wraps up in Chicago, Illinois. I find it so weird that tickets are still available. I don't know if the Chicago venue is significantly larger than the other venues on the tour. But Chicago is the wrestling city, right? I mean, that's where All In's happening. I thought they would have sold out pretty quick.
I wonder if everyone's saving their money for All In tickets.
All the Chicagoans are just like, I can't afford to go to two things. But now they're going to be missing out on the Dogs versus Cheeseburger and Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yes, they will be missing that. They should really rethink their life choices.
But actually, Chicago, I mean, maybe it's because it's Chicago, maybe it's because of the other tour, but this card is looking interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. This is probably the tightest packed with talent, like promising matches. Yeah. Not that there's a lot of talent, but...
Three women's matches on this card.
Yes, yes.
Look at that. So cool. Tennille Dashwood and Karen Q. Deonna Purrazzo and Kelly Klein continuing their heated rivalry. And Sumi Sakai defending the Women of Honor title for the first time against Jenny Rose.
Yeah.
Oh, and Austin Aries.
Yep.
Versus Silas Young for the TV title.
Yeah, that's a big deal for that to come to Chicago. Austin Aries actually, you know, coming back and going for the TV title against Silas.
Yeah. Briscoe's defending the tag titles against Roppongi 3K. presuming they don't lose the titles to Naito and Bushi the night before. Jay Lethal versus Chucky T, dealing with the big fallout from their loss on Wednesday night. Possibly. We'll see. Maybe Chucky T is going to turn heel. I really don't see that happening.
I don't see that happening. I don't know that he would be a competent heel, although maybe that's really maybe that's dismissive. Maybe the Kentucky gentleman has it in him.
Yeah. Maybe he'll rebrand himself as Charles Taylor, and he'll be very straightforward and serious.
I think there's a lot of people who'd be very disappointed if that happened. So.
That's the goal. We also got Flip versus the Octopus.
Oh, yep. You'll get a lot of flipping
and a lot of arm drags.
Yeah, a lot of submission holds.
Yeah, so I'm interested in that one because totally different styles.
Yeah, actually, and I've watched a lot of this recently because, you know, some of the big champions out of New Japan and other events are submission specialists. So seeing someone who's a bit more of a high flyer like Flip versus someone who's more technically proficient like Gresham, it's always interesting to see how that ends up. I'm always a sucker for someone jumping into a submission hold. That is like, that's something I'll always get down with. And so I would expect to see a lot of that when it comes down to Gresham and Flip.
Oh, yeah. Flip doing the kip up into like a leg hold or something, or going for the 450 and being caught with an arm bar.
Yes, exactly. I'm a sucker for that. I think that there's so many great ways to execute that and make it look really, really good. It ends up looking like real wrestling, and it ends up looking like a good fight. Like there's so many ways that can be pulled off. I'm looking forward to seeing that happen between Flip and Gresham.
And then the main event, final match of the War of the Worlds tour, 10-man tag, Naito, Evil, Sonata, Bushi, and Takahashi against Cody, Marty, Hangman, and the Bucks. Is that your match of the tour?
I mean, that's got to be, right? Or at least, you know, that's at the very top of the list.
Yeah, and lots of stories to tell there, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got the story within Bullet Club. You have the story within LIJ. You have Naito coming into this as the new Intercontinental champ. You've got Evil and Sonata and Bushi and Takahashi, like all of them now contending against the Young Bucks, who are going on a heavyweight tag team tear in New Japan. Like, there's lots of great stories that intersect here.
And obviously tension between Cody and Marty.
Mm-hmm.
Hangman Page being haunted by visions of having murdered Joey Ryan.
Exactly. I mean, that's still obviously a problem.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, you can't just murder someone and then get over it 2 weeks later. Unless you're Kenny Omega and the guy you murdered is Adam Cole, in which case, who cares?
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's okay.
Yeah.
He deserved it. He was poisoning Matt Jackson.
Yeah, it's all fair game. So that's War of the Worlds. Lots happening in these 4 days. And I guess we'll be talking about it on this week's show, or on next week's show, I should say.
Yeah.
I don't know if at one point I was thinking maybe we could do like a bonus podcast just focusing on the War of the Worlds, but this weekend is so busy with these shows and I've got other things going on in my life. So I think instead we're just going to try to cram as much as we can into the beginning of next week's episode.
Yeah, maybe just highlight the best of the best.
Yeah, like our favorite match or two per night, and we'll try not to gush too much.
I mean, I know you're going to want to talk about Cheeseburger for like at least a half hour, but we'll probably have to move on.
Yeah, I'll do like 10 minutes on the dogs and then you can just talk about whatever else. Can we please get the dogs versus Takahashi and somebody so that we get dog versus cat?
Oh, well, I mean, you know that this War of the Worlds tour is also bringing Daryl Jr. to the States for the first time.
I know. That's like the banner headline, really, at the end of the day.
Well, I mean, these are the guys, they've done their tours in the U.S. before. Maybe that's old hat, but Chicago, come out for Daryl Jr. He's making his first appearance in Chicago ever.
In the corner of the main event, I guess, right?
Oh, yep.
Daryl Jr. in one corner, Bernard the Business Bear in the other.
Oh.
You know that's happening.
It better happen. I'm going to be strongly disappointed if that doesn't happen. Although, keep Daryl away from Skrull, because last time Skrull was anywhere near him, that poor suffered.
I think Bernard's getting bumped by Daryl this time. He's always going down to somebody.
Who do I have to bribe to make this a absolute surety? I need to make sure that this happens.
Send us your thoughts on War of the World before or after. Like, what do you think about these matches, and what do you think about the tour and all of this stuff? TalkingHonor@gmail.com is our email address. Or send us questions about anything, about where you think other storylines on ROH TV are going, possible matches for Best in the World, what should be done with guys like Kenny King or the Motor City Machine Guns, who are kind of a little lost at the moment. Send us all your thoughts. We want to hear them, and we'll address them on the air and talk about them. And we're already almost at the hour and a half mark. Out of time. We haven't even talked about the new episode of Being the Elite.
No, we haven't.
Season premiere for episode 101, first episode of season 2. A lot to get in there. I mean, I don't know. Last week on the show, half jokingly, I said we almost need like a whole separate podcast just to talk about Being the Elite. Because we go on and on. Lola and I went on and on back in the old days of Talking Honor. You've only been on one episode. Your first episode on the show, we did the same thing.
Yep.
So what's the solution? What do we do here?
I don't know. What can we possibly do?
Well, listeners, talkinghonor@gmail.com. If some of your favorite ROH podcasts personalities were to do a separate podcast all about Being the Elite, and maybe we did something like we went back to the beginning and we watched every episode in order and we talked about them on the air, a couple episodes per podcast, and maybe, you know, we trace the history of Being the Elite. But we could also throw in stuff like, I don't know, like backstory, like the history of Bullet Club, or the history of Adam Cole or Adam Page. Adam Page's history in ROH is kind of an interesting one, right? He went from being the young boy with the decade. He became the Hangman. We could, I don't know, maybe we could have other people on the show and we could review the episodes, and in the same way that, you know, other people review other television shows, right? Why does Buffy the Vampire Slayer deserve 20 million podcasts, but Being the Elite deserves none?
I mean, Being the Elite has 200,000 some subscribers. Those people would like to be able to talk about it as well.
They're up to over 100 episodes now. And did you know that 100 episodes is generally considered how many a television show needs in order to be put into syndication?
Well, there you go. So if they were like a broadcast TV show, they would already be running reruns.
They'd be running reruns on TBS every weekday afternoon at 3 o'clock, right after repeats of the Steve Harvey Show. I don't know. Should we leave it at that for this week? Should we say that maybe there's a chance that maybe a Being the Elite podcast will be coming your way in the near future, and if this sort of thing appeals to you, talkinghonor@gmail.com, tell us what you'd be interested in hearing on the show, what you'd like us to focus on and get into, whether you want more history or context around what was happening in the worlds of ROH and New Japan when these episodes were airing, looking at it from an aesthetic point of view, like tracing the growth of the show itself, or should we just focus on like the characters and have it be more goofy and fun? What would interest you?
Yeah. Or is this a terrible idea and should we not do it at all?
Yeah, are we just, you know, like Shane Taylor said to Lanny Poffo, we're just riding coattails here and we're just trying to live off of other people's success. And we should stick to making content instead of just talking about other people's successful shows.
But if wrestling has taught me anything, it's that riding off of someone else's coattails is an excellent way to eventually get to your own unique mark. So maybe this is exactly what we need to be doing.
Maybe. Maybe this is the start of something special. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. We'll have more info for you on that potential podcast next week on this show. Also next week on ROH Television, Briscoes versus Young Bucks for the tag titles. I mean, presuming that the Briscoes don't lose the tag titles to Naito and Bushi or to Roppongi 3K. I have a feeling that Briscoes are still going to be champions come June, but that's just me.
I mean, don't underestimate Sho and Yo, but I feel like your hunch is probably correct.
Yes, but we'll find out next week. Thanks so much for listening, guys. My name is Harley R. Paget. You can find me on Twitter at Talking Honor. And my new permanent co-host,
I'm Emily Fear, and you can find me on Twitter at ForkedPGH. That's ForkedPGH on Twitter.
And we will both be back next week. Cheers.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including the review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.